Frances Osborne never knew Adina Sackville because the details of her great-grandmother's scandalous life were kept secret by her family. Ms. Osborne's new book, The Bolter, is a carefully researched biography of Adina Sackville. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased it has brought Ms. Osborne to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
So how did you find out that you had this infamous ancestor?
Well, you know, she was kept a secret from me, Leonard, because she behaved extremely badly. And when I was 13, suddenly the British papers were full of the story of the murder of the third of her five husbands.
But he wasn't murdered while she was married.
No. They'd separated by then. But he'd been part of this thing called the Happy Valley set in Kenya, and Idina had been the founder of that. When she was 30, she married him, who was only 20, she was only 22 at the time. This was in the early 1920s, wild times across the world. And she took him out to Kenya. There, anyhow, the newspapers were full of the stories of this woman who entertained her guests as she lay in the bath and after dinner made them play games to swap partners and had lovers without number and who basically loved sex, which is sometimes a bit of a taboo for talk about women loving sex and certainly was back then.
Well, she wasn't alone in this. That was the White Mischief, which is the story of the murder of her ex-husband, the third husband, suggests that everybody seemed to be doing this sort of thing. I guess it was the upper-class thing to do, especially if you were in Kenya. Or was she even on the far edges of this?
Well, the extent to which the partner swapping in groups behavior like that certainly was to the edges of the behavior. But she had a... you've got to look at it in the context of these were all people who'd grown up before the First World War under the sort of Edwardian rules of behavior. These were started by Queen Victoria's son.
Who was kind of a wild man.
Who was a wild man. In a way, his mother was queen for so long, he had little else to do but have affairs with ladies. And he lived in
Unlike a current prince.
He lived in a place called Marlborough House, and something began called the Marlborough House Rules. And this said that you could have affairs, providing they were with people of your same social group. The women would wait until they'd had an heir and a spare, which meant two sons, to make sure that the property would go to the eldest son, and if one died, the second son. So it wouldn't then matter who was the actual father of the other children. This would happen between 5 and 7 in the afternoon for purely practical reasons, which was that ladies would lace their corsets as tightly as possible to fit into their dresses and have their dresses fitted around these tight corsets. It was very hard for anybody apart from to lace them that tightly, so their maid would undress them at 5 from their tea gown and come back at 7 to put them into their evening gown.
So this was the time that it was most convenient to have an affair.
Exactly.
Now, it was also around the time of World War I where we have something like Dadaism, which suggests that the world has gone to hell in a handbasket and all the rules no longer apply. Was that part of the thinking here?
Definitely. This turned into, by the end of the First World War, when exactly as you said, everyone was looking and saying, whatever the rules we live by, they led to this massacre. They cannot make sense. And people began to party as if there was no tomorrow. They were making up for lost time. They decided the old boundaries didn't matter. Idina ran off from her first husband, who was one of Britain's richest young men, and ran to Kenya with a near penniless man. And she, when that marriage fell apart very quickly, she came back and lived in this house in London, with the very famous actress Gladys Cooper. And then Tallulah Bankhead was sent over to be put into her care. This was extraordinary because by now Idina was about one of the most infamous people around.
And they thought that she would settle down, Tallulah Bankhead, who was considered kind of a wild woman here?
I think it was actually thought that Tallulah, this is when she was very young, she was 17, Tallulah, when she first came to London. It was thought that Idina would, you know, show her how to dress. Idina was a muse for the great designer of the day, Molyneux, and so she took Tallulah off there. She showed Tallulah how to diet. They ate, like, literally 3 celery sticks for lunch. They were seriously disciplined, those women. And then perhaps what wasn't quite predicted is she taught Tallulah how to bathe in champagne, and a friend of Tallulah's was telling me about this in New York just a few days ago, about how Tallulah still talked about it till the end of her life.
I'm not sure it's the best idea to bathe in alcohol, but...
I know. I wonder what it did to her skin.
Now, the name Sackville is a familiar one, Virginia Woolf and her sister. What is the story here?
Oh, Idina and Vita Sackville West, the writer, were second cousins, to be precise. They knew each other. And Vita actually wrote Idina's obituary in the Times when she died.
Why was Idina called the bolter?
A bolter is a woman who bolts from her husband, who leaves him. And Idina was called a bolter because, first of all, this very scandalous bolt in 1918, 1919. And secondly, because she did this five times.
Which was rare. Divorce was rare enough. Although once you've done it once, I guess you can do it again and again.
Well, no, actually, that wasn't quite the truth. Very few people divorced before the First World War. But suddenly, at the end of the First World War, in 1920, the rate of divorces multiplied several hundred, if not thousandfold. And a lot of marriages had been pulled apart by the war, as Idina's had been. And there was this new wave of female independence, women going off to have their own adventures and do their own things.
It was said that she could whistle a chap from a tree, which suggests that she was beautiful, was she?
Actually, one of the most interesting things about Idina is that she wasn't born a great beauty. She made herself, however, irresistibly attractive. Of course, when I found out about this at the age of 13 and my mother had been forced to admit that it was her grandmother, I found this great. I thought, if Idina can make herself attractive, then we all can. There's hope for me.
And she did it simply by developing a wonderful sense of fashion?
Was one of the things. She was well known. It was written up in papers across the world that she was well known for wearing clothes well and that clothes just became alive when she put them on. She was also extremely well read. Extremely witty and could talk about anything, and she used to fix her eyes, as many women who had men saw this her doing this during the evening said she would come into the room would come alive because she did this, she had that zing, and then she would fix her big blue eyes on her target for the evening.
And he would get the idea.
You know, she would slowly reel him in. It was apparently extraordinary to watch.
So you discovered her in this newspaper article. Did you talk to your mother about it?
Yes, I mean, this was the great moment. I was 13 years old. I was reading this article with this picture of this woman standing between a pair of elephant tusks, and underneath it said, aristocrats, alcohol, and adultery. And it told the story of the bath, of the partner swapping, of Idina. And my younger sister was 11. She wanted to read this. I said, you were too young. You know, I'm 13, old enough, 11, too young. But we had an argument, and we ended up back in front of my parents so they could decide. And my mother went bright red. And my father said, you have to tell them. And my mother said, this woman was my grandmother.
And it was the first husband who you're descended from.
It is. I mean.
So this is before Idina really became Idina.
Well, you know, she already was walking around with a black Pekingese called Satan under her arm. Then she came from a long line of rule breakers. Her maternal grandmother had circumnavigated the globe and written this great book. Her mother had been a key proponent of women's suffrage and done some key things. But behind this, there was a lot of tragedy, though.
She was upset when her husband, David Ewan Wallace, was unfaithful.
She was extremely...
Is that why she left him?
Yes, it is why she left him. I was trying not to ruin the story, but there's I know. And that is why she left him. And I mean, the tragedy is that Idina left a man she loved so much that at the end of her life, she still had a photo of him by her bed saying she should never have left him. And in fact, just before she married her fifth husband, she was writing, this is everything I've been searching for since I left Ewan. And when she left him, it meant she was separated from her sons because there was no way she could leave the marriage and take the sons off to Africa with her.
But that was your mother's main complaint against her, wasn't it?
That was it. My mother, when she was young, so when I was young, then showed me this photograph of these two small boys, aged 3 and 4, looking lost. And my mother said, this is my father and his brother, when Idina left them. I had to know why. This was part of the quest for the book. I absolutely had to know why. Idina, how she could have, somebody who sounded so tantalizing had done something that seemed so wrong.
My guest is Frances Osborne, who is the author of Lilla's Feast, now a book about her great-grandmother called The Bolter. It is published by Knopp. A listener wants to get your opinion about the class snobbery of the Bloomsbury set, a topic, he says, which is rarely mentioned in interviews of this sort. Would these people have felt totally separate, totally superior to everyone else in England at the time?
Well, Igina wasn't part of the Bloomsbury set, and I'm really not an expert on the Bloomsbury set, but I, from what I've gathered of them, I spoke at a literary festival associated with them in the summer, is that they had they were completely in their own world. You know, they had a belief not so much in a class system, but in themselves as artists and writers.
And she went to Kenya. Was that a typical thing at the time for people in the set to do?
Well, she was the first of the set to do, of her wild living set to do, and the rest of them followed her. After the First World War, the British government wanted people to start farming in Kenya. You know, a lot of movement and politics over the years has been to do with countries needing grain-producing areas. And so they offered farms to people who'd been serving in the war, and Idina's second husband had done just that.
And since they were in Kenya, they were away from the eyes of most of the people who would know what was going on. So they were they felt they could have a lot more license in their lives?
Partly that, but actually you have to understand that in these Kenyan farms, people, they were working very hard. You know, I have photographs of Idina bent double, pulling stuff out of the land herself. She bred the best Jersey dairy herd in Africa. She brought pyrethrum farming into the country, which raised a lot of money for the country. And she worked extremely hard, and these people would live hours and hours drive from their nearest friends. So when they did get together, which might be at gaps of several weeks, and people would drive for hours and hours through the mud and the dirt, and they would then sort of arrive, and they were at high altitude, and they'd have the excitement of seeing each other and the alcohol. I actually went to stay with one farmer who lived, and his wife, who lived like this, in very far from their friends. And they're extremely happily married, but the wife looked at me and said, you know, I'm extremely happily married, but when all I've seen is across the table is my husband for several weeks on end. She said, we discussed the fact people have a need for human contact, for social interaction, and normally that's just a chat or shaking hands, but the more sort of pent up the desire has been, the greater the need. And somehow with these people, the sort of alcohol, the altitude, and the fact that at last they were seeing some friends of theirs, this came moved from a handshaking to leaping into bed with them.
So she married this young man. She left your great-grandfather, married this man, Charles Gordon. That marriage didn't last long. She went back to Europe. That's where she met the man we know from White Mischief.
Yes. Charles Gordon later complained that Idina was an nymphomaniac, which is why the marriage didn't last. But Idina then went back, had a wild time with Tallulah, and sort of after falling in from man to man's arms, really sort of seeking what she'd lost and left behind in her first marriage. You know, this is part of the tragedy of her life. She was searching for love through sex. And in fact, that love had been right under her nose all the time with her children, as she later discovered. But she met Errol, and she knew Jos Errol wouldn't be faithful to her. So they started off agreeing to an open marriage.
The Financial Times reviewer of your book said that Idina misidentified promiscuity for sexual power. Was she trying to maintain power in the marriage by allowing Jos to sleep with other women?
Well, interesting you say that. I very much believe that these games she organized, and she was regarded as high priestess of these games after dinner where people would stretch out a sheet and blow a feather across it. These were a way of controlling who Jos, her husband, would sleep with. He was going to sleep with other people, but if she was mistress of ceremonies, then she hadn't lost control of him.
Hmm. They went back to Kenya, and then that marriage broke up, and was when Jos was with another woman that he was killed. But she went on to a fourth husband and then a fifth husband.
She did. Idina's fourth husband was an American called Donald Haldeman. And she built for him the most beautiful house, which is still standing, because she was such a good farmer and worked so hard herself. She had and treated the people who worked for her very well. Her house was left standing.
Now, why did she break up with Joss? After all, they had this agreement, and they seemed to be working it out.
Some people say Joss left her for another house. He ran off to this extraordinary house called the Jinn Palace, as in Genie Palace, which is on the shores of Lake Naivasha and was very much featured in the movie White Mischief. And he also, the woman he left her for, also had a lot more money, and he had basically spent a great deal of Idina's money, if not all of it. And
then he was killed for sleeping with another man's wife.
Well,
so some people
knows?
Didn't accept these rules. They didn't want to play these games.
Well, I think he was probably killed in a fit of jealousy by somebody, although there are a lot of different theories. That's part of the fascination of the story, is that nobody knows exactly what happened, but these wild times ended in death.
Did Idina continue her sexually free ways with her fourth and fifth husbands?
She most certainly did with her fourth husband. Her fourth husband, having gone from a serially unfaithful husband, she went to a husband who was almost too doting for Idina's extensive sexual appetites. And he decided he was going to shoot anybody he suspected of being Idina's lover. And this was a wide range. But anyhow, he used to go off on safari for long times. And she employed somebody to sit with a drum at the end of the drive so that he would beat when he saw the dust cloud of a car approaching, which would give whoever was in bed with Idina time to get out and drive off. And several people lost their car tires as a result.
Do you see this as, I know this is an odd question, but as a time when feminism is starting to develop? Because we are talking to some degree about equality of the sexes.
This is it, but actually people forget how long feminism had been developing from. The women's movement had started back in the 1870s.
But mostly to get the vote.
Yes, but it was more than that. You know, Idina's mother and grandmother had both been great proponents of feminism, as we now call it. But even before the First World War, women were going around in groups of, you know, unchaperoned, in groups of girls, driving fast cars, smoking cigarettes. And this really continued afterwards.
Was she able to reestablish a relationship with her sons?
She was. Very movingly, she did. She was banned from seeing them, and so while they were still children, she had no access. But once they were at university, her eldest son had a crisis. And a mutual friend knew that actually Idina was the only person with the understanding to talk to him during this crisis. And they were put together and they met. Extraordinarily, he at the time was a would-be Christian socialist priest and sort of abstinent from alcohol, well, trying to be abstinent from sex, which provides some amusing reading. And he also, and she was this, you know, small bottle blonde who'd slept with everyone, but actually as they wrote these extraordinary letters afterwards, they were the only two people who really understood each other.
Frances Osborne will be speaking with Tina Brown tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the Strand Bookstore, Broadway at 12th Street. The book, The Bolter, published by Knopf. Just one more question quickly. What's your family's reaction been to this book? Are they still embarrassed?
No, they're not. After my mother finished reading it, she sent me a text late at night saying, thank you for giving me my life story.
And thank you for coming by and talking about it.
Thank you.